So what Android do you use?
I am on the phone, you mean?
Yeah.
This one's a 6P, but I'm getting my Pixel 2 today.
So should be
there when I get home. You have a Pixel 2?
Yeah. I love my Pixel
2. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
Excellent. That was very good. Talking to my co-host about it. He's got a Pixel 2. He said he loves it.
Yeah, particularly for the kids, shooting video of the kids.
Yes. From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
In this episode of Fragmented, Don makes the pilgrimage to Microsoft Connect. For those who don't know, Connect is Microsoft's developer conference where they announce a bunch of new products and services. Don got to interview a bunch of folks, and in this episode, we talked to two of them, Miguel Di Casa and Smina Passat. Both of them are fantastic guests. And a secret note for you, Don actually has a developer crush on Miguel, and he's had this forever, and rightfully so, because Miguel is this genius developer who led some major open source projects like Genome, Linux, Mono, and more recently, Xamarin. I think as programmers, we have so much to learn from folks in other industries and platforms, and Miguel is most definitely one of those people. There are true software engineering gems in this interview, so definitely take a listen. Right after, we talk to Samina, who's a program manager for Microsoft's really cool service, App Center. I won't give too much away, but definitely take a listen to some of the amazing features they have in store with this newly announced product. As Android developers, you might find it super useful. So, on to the show.
Okay, I'm here with a special guest today. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Miguel.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, for folks that aren't familiar with you like I am, which I'm very familiar with you because I've kind of been a fan of your work for many years, I would love if you could explain kind of your background, what you've worked on, which I think a lot of folks are going to be amazed by, and kind of what you do at Microsoft now.
Okay. I'll just describe the era of open source. I first tried to collaborate with the Wine team back in the day when we wanted to compete with Microsoft. So that was, you know, I had a minimal contribution there. And I wrote the Midnight Commander, which around 1992, which is the file manager I still use every day. I can't stand any other file manager after all these years. You know, habits die hard. Then I worked on the Linux kernel, in particular for the Spark port. Device drivers for the SGI and the Spark machines, and then worked on the GNOME desktop, you know, foundational pieces.
Did you kind of help create that from the ground up, or
yes,
what?
It was me and Federico launched the effort in. Federico and myself launched the effort in 1997, I think, And Federico's still working on it. And then I worked at one of the nice things that I built that I was most proud of that era is the numeric spreadsheet.
So what happened after the GNOME project? What did you work on after that?
We did GNOME. I did the numeric spreadsheet. Then we started a company to build Evolution, which was an Outlook client.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was an Outlook client, an Outlook clone for Linux. And to deliver this, we ended up building our own distribution of GNOME because everybody shipped the broken GNOME. So we called it Helix GNOME. And Helix GNOME was the vehicle by which you used Evolution. And after that, it was so painful to build Evolution, which was at the time a very large C-based multi-threaded application that when Microsoft came out with .NET, we said, this is what we need. We need a high-level, high-performance language, something that blends ease of use, simplicity with performance. And .NET was that thing. So I started the Mono project in 2001, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting because you're very outspoken open source. And then you see .NET, which is closed source at the time, and think, like, that's it.
The ideas are good. The ideas are good. If you look further back, right, Linux is a clone of a proprietary operating system at the time. Unix was proprietary, right?
So, exactly.
C was a proprietary language too. It just happened that it had an open source implementation.
I was not aware of that early on.
Yeah, I mean, C was a language built by AT&T. And Unix was an operating system built by AT&T.
Knew that one, yeah. I didn't know about this. I didn't know the C was closed down initially. Okay,
well, interesting. The specs were public, right? But if you wanted to get a C compiler, you got to pay somebody.
You got to pay some. Okay.
Yeah, and eventually there were open source implementations. So that was the same idea behind Mono was there's this cool tech. Let's make it free. Let's make a free version of that, right? So we did bring that free version to Linux and Mac. And
that must have been an answer. I mean, I think about that now, and I came from the .NET world, and so I remember when .NET came out and it, you know, 1.0, 2.0, and just the mountain of libraries and like the so much code to bring over. How did you even attempt to even start that project? It seems like an unsurmountable task.
Well, there were multiple times when we launched the project where I said, what have I gotten myself into? I did not think this through. I remember thinking sometime along the lines, I did not think this through. Uh-huh. But we started small. We said, let's address our particular use case, mm-hmm. right? Let's just do what we need for building desktop apps on Linux. That's what mattered to us. How can we make it easier for us to build desktop apps on Linux? So we said, all right, we'll build a JIT and we'll build a GC. It's probably not that difficult to build a garbage collector and a just-in-time compiler and a C# compiler. And then it's like, oh God, what is this? But it turned out there were not the worst. The most difficult thing was the breadth of the library.
Yes, I can imagine.
And that took years of effort. But there was a great community that rallied around it, but I just remember thinking, I'm never launching something of this size again. Never again. This is insane.
Did you start when you finally got to the point where you could develop an app for, you know, in Mono, so it would run on Linux? Yeah. Was that a point you said, all right, we're kind of done? Or did you look at that and say, all right, well, now what can we do next with it? What was the next phase after that?
The desktop definitely took off, and we built the libraries. There was this gentleman called Mike Kessner who built the binding to the GTK libraries, which is what GNOME used.
Yep.
And we were very successful for a while building these applications. But the Linux desktop, A, didn't take off, and B, there was significant concern about the Microsoft technology because, you know, at the time Ballmer had said, you know, whatever he said, and, you know, Linux is a problem and cancer and so on. So it failed to get traction. I mean, it failed to get traction there. So we did experiment a little bit of with Mono on the server, and that went well, but it was at the time where Linux was not clearly an easy solution. And in particular, yeah. it's a period where the enterprise editions of Linux are very expensive, right? So if you're a serious business wanting to get to Linux, you're looking at this going, well, this open source thing, if I'm going to get it, I'm going to get the supported one.
Yeah.
And then when you look at the cost of the supported one versus the Windows one, I'm like, why am I doing this?
And it's funny because most people think that it's the other way around, that the Microsoft was always more expensive, but it seems that you're saying that...
Well, so that was very interesting. Initially, Windows was, I remember, because we had a very good pitch. This is even the supported Linux plus Mono is cheaper than Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you know? Microsoft went and changed the pricing. So, God, that's just... That was once they fixed the pricing, that argument could no longer be made.
Uh-huh.
And after that, Mono found its calling in the iOS and Android worlds, right? So again, in this era, Linux was definitely growing, but it was, you know, .NET was not a thing that people wanted to move to on Linux servers. But on Android and iOS, it turns out that it was a great technology and people loved it. So we found this place where there was not a lot of ideology and there was a kind of a business need, mm-hmm. a business requirement, and people were willing to pay money for the SDKs. So that's so we ended up doing Xamarin. We did Xamarin with for iOS and Android and, you know, everything else that comes after that.
So the question about the early Mono and the mobile days, I was a .NET developer. I'm thinking this was 2009-ish, 10-ish.
Yeah.
And at the time, I had started getting into Android. So I'd wrote an Android app in Java, but I needed the iOS version because customers were asking for it. Mm-hmm. I had no intention of ever wanting to touch Objective-C at all.
Yeah.
I liked you know, .NET and Java was difficult as it was already because it just felt very verbose. Long story short, I decided to go, I picked up a copy of MonoDevelop and I wrote my first iOS app in MonoDevelop. Oh. And actually it was a fantastic experience. And that was the time before even it was in Android. You guys had moved over to, I think it was MonoDroid it was initially called.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. The original one was MonoTouch and MonoDroid.
Why did you decide to go to iOS first versus to Android first? Because it seems like the Java language is more similar to C Sharp and so forth.
Let me think.
Now, I know this is way back. It's a long time ago.
I don't know that Android had that big of a market or excitement initially.
It didn't.
So what happened was that... That we saw Unity, we built Mono for the Unity guys. We first ported Mono. I mean, what I mean is we ported Mono to iOS, which required us to support this thing called static compilation. And we ported Mono to this environment for the sake of Unity, which was building a game engine. And we witnessed Unity go from a handful of engineers of staff, from like 5 people to 80 people or 75 people in a year. And they took off entirely on the sales of their iOS product. So the early days of iOS were an incredibly exciting and vibrant community of, it kind of re-sparked the small software vendor industry, which had languished. I don't know if you remember, but in this era, independent software doesn't really have a distribution channel. It doesn't exist. So a lot of people, if you're a software engineer, you work at a big company doing...
Was it the micro ISV movement or something like that they called it before? Something like that?
I don't know if it was called that, but it definitely... I mean, you could see that all of a sudden, a lot of people were taking bets on, I'm going to stop doing this thing at work. I'm going to be the DBA or maintaining an internal system. And I'm going to take my chances and build something exciting. And also the web is happening, right? People are starting to do their own thing on the web, but this has a monetization path. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people took chances. So it reinvigorated and kind of gave a lot of people a sense of possibility that that had been lacking for, I would say, a decade of not happening, right? So there was a tremendous amount of excitement on iOS. We built our product for iOS, sort of watching what Unity had done very quickly. So we said, well, let's build one not focused on games, but one focused on regular apps. So what can we do for developers in that space? And we did Android, I think, a year later. Yeah. But I think at the time, Android did not have the market numbers or the excitement. The devices were not as exciting. Right. Yeah. But we knew it was something that we wanted to do early on. And I think it was the right bet to do once that happened. I think that's why it happened that way. But I would need to look at my notes.
I wouldn't doubt it at all, because when I wrote my first MonoTouch app, it was 2009-ish. And that was before the Verizon Droid came out. And that was the first big marketing push that was behind Android. Right.
Yeah. Before that, you had the G3, which was... Was it the G3?
The G1, G3. G1 was the first phone.
The one that you flipped the thing.
Yeah,
I still have it at home.
I got one too.
I don't have the power plug. I couldn't find the power plug the other day. Maybe it's a regular USB. I don't know.
It makes sense when that would happen. So when you did move over and you started supporting Android, did you find that there was any challenges that you encountered that were a lot different or just unique to the Android environment?
Yes. I mean, on Android, we took advantage of the fact that you could JIT compile. So it was less work than iOS from that perspective.
Okay.
Yes. So you can JIT compile. And we support both, right? You can JIT compile or statically compile. You can choose either one of those pros and cons for each. With Android, I would say the biggest challenge were that the tools were, at least they felt flakier.
Oh, they were.
And you know, there's all kinds of flaky things, ADB, right?
And that was back in the Eclipse days, I think it was early on
SDK, right? The ADB tools and ADB was always this, you know, things could work or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, I think that these days there we still get reports and, you know, connecting on that thing. But I think that was the main challenge. I mean, that was challenging. There were other interesting problems. There were very different problems to solve on iOS versus Android. For example, Android, they don't really have strongly typed APIs, right? Enums on Java don't behave the same way as C#. So part of the work that we did is, well, let's strong type these APIs. Mm-hmm. But you rely on documentation, and you rely on the documentation being up to date.
Those were the early days.
There was a little bit of that, right? Those were kind of the early, how do we deliver because C#, your developers really, get very productive because they IntelliSense really helps them the whole way, mm-hmm. right? So how do we get there? And also the model, there's this dynamic model at the heart of Android, right? The way that you launch activities that is typeless, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, it works, but the ID just can't help you, right? The ID is not there to help you. So you need to resort to, okay, how do you do this thing? And you have to, what? You got to pass what? It's all right. So it's, you know, I've always believed that, I can't remember which book I read at some point that said the reason why you want to encapsulate the way that you should design APIs is one where you reduce the surface area mm-hmm. that the developer has to remember, right? Order of parameters, meaning of parameters, order of operations,
yeah.
right? So you want to reduce that so that it boils down to the basics, right? Yep. And that's definitely not one of those APIs, you know, the activity switching and so on.
So you went from MonoTouch and MonoDroid, which probably most folks listening to this podcast don't remember those days. And now we've come to something that they're probably familiar with, which is Xamarin. How did the whole thing from Mono, how do we go from Mono to Xamarin? What was that?
Yeah, so what happened was that these were products built by Novell.
Okay.
But Novell was an IT company. It was a company that was focused on things like management and servers and things like that. And Mono was a developer tool. So Mono really never found the support network inside Novell that it needed, you know, sales, marketing, all these things. They were afterthoughts. And, you know, Novell did great and the management was very supportive, but the organization just was the wrong one. So Novell was acquired through through one of these financial takeovers.
Yep.
So it was taken private. And as soon as they privatized the company, within a week, we were laid off.
Oh, whoa, wow.
Yeah, they laid us off. So I told the team, please hold on. Let's see if we can rebuild this. I think there's something in this space, in .NET and mobile. We're going to make it happen. We have plans. Just hold on. Don't get a job. Mm-hmm. And we got the team back together. And, you know, we launched as a separate company, Xamarin.
Mm-hmm.
And we essentially ended up negotiating with Novell the rights to the product because they were going to get rid of, I mean, they were out of the business. So we negotiated the rights. We got the code out.
And, oh, wow, nice.
And we rebranded it Xamarin, right? So so that was the story. That's how it happened. You know, it was closely associated with the identity of the company.
So now you got Xamarin. And within the last few years, Microsoft acquired Xamarin.
Mm-hmm.
Where is Xamarin now? For developers.
Well, what is nice is that now what we have essentially is Microsoft has this platform called the .NET platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a platform that is very interesting because I think it was the first one that embraced the idea that the language and the framework are not static.
Mm-hmm.
It's evolving. It's constantly evolving. Back from the days of, you know, it felt in the past that the languages of old were, this is the language that you use.
That's how you do it.
And now we're like, oh, we now talk about C++ 11, C++ 17, C++, right?
Yeah.
So but that changed. But I think that Microsoft very early on, around 2001 or 2002 when they launched it, they launched C#, and then, you know, a couple of years later, they launched C#2.
Yeah.
And this at the time was unprecedented. They were upgrading the language very aggressively and upgrading the capabilities very aggressively. And Java did a little bit of this, by the way. Don't get me wrong. But it was kind of a very inspiring to watch. And to this day, we keep improving the languages and the tools, and we evolve them mm-hmm. to meet the needs of developers. So now Xamarin is just the tool that gets you to iOS and Android, but it's part of all, it's all .NET, right?
Yeah.
So we run from watches, Android or iOS watches, to phones, to tablets, you know, mm-hmm. to desktops, to servers, to, you know, supercomputers. I mean, you have .NET or WebAssembly.
Yeah.
Now, oh, okay. So you now really can run .NET across the board. And what is interesting is that you can share a lot of code, existing debug, well-tested code. You just run it everywhere. And you get all the productivity wins that you get from Visual Studio and all these tools. So that's the story. Now we're just part of, we complete the story. We complete the .NET development story. Mm-hmm. that Microsoft now has.
For developers that are listening, there's a lot of them that have come over from .NET that have, just like me, when I moved over in 2008 to start doing Android, I felt like I stepped back about 8 years. I didn't have certain things like Lambda functions, anything like
Come back. We love you. We love you, folks. We love you. I mean, Java has evolved, but it's never too late to give it a shot at C#. I would say in our space, C# is just an amazing language, and it keeps evolving and getting, you know, we're just previewing nullable references, right? So we can.
What does that mean? Can you break that down real quick?
Yeah, nullable reference is this capability that we're adding to the language where when you have a reference type, like for example, let's say a URL or a string or a, I don't know, if you have an instance of a widget, right? Or a button, right? So you have a button B. And then the compiler says, well, if you call it button B, it means that it needs to have a value, right? The default right now is null, and that's not kosher. If you're okay with that being null, put a question mark. So you have to say button question mark B.
Kotlin does this.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Swift does this too. And so essentially it helps you find bugs in your code.
Yeah.
So it's a big rollout that we're doing. And I think it was announced yesterday, the first preview
of
this stuff. But so we get that language, C# that continues to evolve. And then we got these more succinct versions, F#. It has a different heritage. It comes from the ML lineage of programming languages, but it integrates with .NET just like C#. And it's just, it's a completely different way of looking at programming. And
it's very functional, right?
It's functional. It's very compact. It's very efficient. So, but it takes a little bit getting used to because you get a, for example, a lot of us do data modeling, the object-oriented way of data modeling, which is, honestly, between us, among us, right? It's kind of primitive. It's kind of primitive. And F# has these, they have records. They do pattern matching on records. They have, they have just much better data types, right? Or easier to use. The compiler does all the heavy lifting for you, essentially. You can... Absolutely everything you can do in F#, you can do in C#. It's just the compiler takes all the pain away, right?
So with Xamarin, can I write an app in F#?
Yes. In fact, I would, one of the things that we launched is this thing called, we're very proud of this, it's called the Live Player.
Okay.
And I think that this is a big improvement. You know, we're talking about ADB being kind of a pain.
Oh, yeah. I just restarted it this morning.
Right. So now we now support a new development mode in Visual Studio and Visual Studio for Mac, where you pair a device. So we deploy a runtime to your device.
Okay.
You don't download an app from the App Store, you know, from the store, and you pair it with your IDE. And then they talk to each other. And essentially, we're running the entire compiler test suite on your device. It has the whole compilation system on your device.
Kind of mind blown right now.
Yeah. So what is interesting about this is that as you type, as soon as if we can compile it, if there's no syntactic errors, we ship the difference to the device and it gets re-executed and reloaded live on the device.
Oh, wow. So I can really speed up the feedback loop for development. Uh-huh.
There is no compile loop. There's nothing. It's instant. And we showed it yesterday on the keynote. There was an interesting moment where where James Montemagno demonstrated it. But essentially, you make changes and they get reflected live. So there's two...
And that's actual C# code that I'm writing or whatever.
Yeah, or F#. And in fact, it is written in F#. So the reason we managed to get this done so quickly is it was written in F#.
Really?
The entire engine that does this magic is all F#. But what is really nice is like I said, as you go through your source code, if you have a file that says like login view and you're coding there, you see the changes live and you can test them live. It's like, oh, what happens here? I want an animation. Oh, let me customize this. Oh, no, the animation timing is wrong. I mean, okay, click, 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 click. And then you switch to a different tab or you open a different file, like, for example, settings. And the display of their in the device switches to settings. And now you're live coding against settings. And it's a little bit of inspiration from a few years ago. There was this Brett Victor, I think. He did a presentation of what should programming be like in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we do save and compile or reload?
Should
be instantaneous. Yeah. So what is interesting is there is no saving with Xamarin Live. player.
So as long as there's no syntactical errors, then it will just...
Yes. There is no save. There is no compile. There's no F5. There's nothing. You type and it runs.
I wonder if what kind of errors I would run into if I might. I guess I could get into a weird state maybe. Yeah. My application is kind of awesome. Things are just garbled all over the screen.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Maybe, like, for example, if you have if your app is deleting files, then yes, it's going to continuously delete the file, right? But it's a very interesting programming model, this new programming model. And I've been using it now for about, I would say about 2 months personally. And at the beginning, I was like, okay, this might be one of those research ideas that are great. But actually, now that I'm into it, it's like, I just can't stand developing the compilation or reloading model, right? Even the web where you gotta save and reload, it's like, oh, that's a pain. No, it's like, you've got your device next to you, you're typing and you're seeing, and this is what I want. Configure your animation, your buttons, locations, the text. I'm like, oh, this looks ugly. I mean,
and it's just happening. It's just going right there.
It's a delight.
What about for things like views? If I want to update, if I'm running the XML view, does that happen as well?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. It is magical.
I'm gonna live view it on my device. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's very, very nice.
So this reminds me a little bit of, I had a conversation with a developer by the name of Gabriel Peel on one of our previous episodes. He works at Airbnb, and they're starting to do a lot of React Native stuff. That's just their culture. But he told me they have a similar thing where he had to save and then a quick change. But within 10, 15 seconds or whatever, the changes had been pushed to his device. And just that, he was mainly talking about the feedback loop of how fast it could happen, just felt like the future. Do you feel like the same way about this?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It is very, very nice. It's incredible.
Because right now with a couple of clients that I have, we're fighting build times of, for a quick rebuild, we're looking at 2-3 minutes. If we get a clean, we're looking at 14, 15 minutes for a rebuild. I mean, this is an app. It's crazy.
Yeah, and this thing works when you're working on the views. When you're working on the end-to-end experience, you can't use this because you're going to have your launch assets. There's a lot. Yeah, I understand. And when you're doing full testing, you're going to wipe out the settings.
Of course,
you want to make sure that you log in from zero. So, you can't use it all the time, but when you're building a particular part of the app, you're going to get very quick results and it works great. But, sometimes you got to just do the whole thing, right?
So it sounds like you're really excited about this.
Yes.
Something other than this, what would be one of your other most favorite parts of Xamarin in general and why?
Well, the thing that we're most proud of at Xamarin is that you get to leverage the massive ecosystem of .NET. So we leverage the languages, the libraries, the IDE. I mean, Visual Studio is, it's just an amazing tool. I mean, and the amount of things that it can do for you, right? It's because, what we've been discussing, for example, this week is that it's not just building the app, right? That is certainly one job. But even today, when we go back to these entrepreneurs that started doing, taking the app store as a way of getting published, there's all these things that you have to do around it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Management of your assets, publishing your binaries. Then it turns like, oh, it turns out we probably should be testing it first. So, rolling out to testers.
Yep.
And then doing maybe testing, maybe doing, a little bit of a, rolling out to 10% of your user base. And then if there's no issues, roll it to everybody. Collect crash reports early on, do A/B testing, integrate with CI, all these things. And so sort of the ecosystem goes beyond just the editing experience, which I'm a fan of, but we're trying to do an end-to-end solution, which is we'll provide the tools all the way from managing your CI. So if you put your code on GitHub, we'll take your GitHub code or, whatever you want to host it, and we'll compile it. We'll give you packages. We'll publish it. We'll do A/B testing per release. We'll give you test cloud, right? We have, I think...
push notifications, crash reporting, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I don't know if you know about test cloud. Well, it used to be called test cloud, but now it's just part of App Center.
Okay.
But we have thousands of devices with different Android versions and form factors and screen sizes and CPUs and GPUs and audio and every possible chipset that you can imagine, right? So we run your tests, your unit tests on device, to make sure that it actually works across the board, right? So you might say, listen, I want, give me the, you know, I want to test on all the machines that are popular in America. So we'll give you the top 100 devices, all right? Or I want the top 100, my products for Asia.
Yeah, so I could actually target the region.
Yeah, so give me the 100, you know, devices that are popular in Asia, because, you know, the Pixel 2 doesn't matter over there, right? They want the, you know, their own version or their own devices. So we run your tests on the physical hardware. We give you the results, right? We manage the crashes. We manage the analytics. We manage the push notifications for you. So, and it's, you know, it's like a la carte. What do you want to use? Where can we help you, right? So I think that really the benefit of Xamarin is that it's a really nice complement to the entire lifecycle development process that you have. And we'll support you across the board. We'll support you not only on the mobile devices, right? Not only Android and iOS and, you know, the desktops like Mac and Windows if you want to, but also on the server, right? So we can manage your lifecycle for your services, for rolling out the services to the cloud. And we can manage not only Azure, but we'll also manage your whatever other cloud provider you want to work with, right? So you know, we're here to make sure that the developers, you know, we used to say that we're here to delight developers, but now I guess we're delighting everybody involved in production of the app from beginning to end, right? Your QA team, your testing team, your design team, your everything, right?
Fantastic.
So that's what I'm excited about, and that's what we're doing here.
Excellent. Well, Miguel, it's been fantastic. I appreciate you. You're coming on the show. Is there anything that you would like specifically to additionally to share with anybody out there, or how could folks even get a hold of you or anything like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there is one other thing that I care deeply about is how do we teach developers to code? We work on these technology called workbooks, which is a little bit like Mathematica notebooks or Jupyter notebooks, but for .NET. And we worked on this for a long time. It's a really nice tool to do interactive development with C#, right? So it's more like, imagine that C# is like Python.
Okay.
You issue commands and you see results immediately.
Oh, nice.
Right? We just open sourced it. We just open sourced it yesterday.
And so what would I use workflows for?
Workbooks.
Workbooks.
You can use them for just to learn the language or try things out. Like, I always have a workbooks window open since I've been using it for about 2 years now. And it is where how does this API work? How do I use this package? There's a new package,
just kind of spike an idea out maybe real fast with some code. How does this
work? Like the other day I was trying, I was thinking about building a Gitter client, right? Gitter is this Slack thing that works on Git, right? So, there's a package. So I just said, get me the Gitter Nuget package.
Mm-hmm.
You get your key. It's like, okay, how do I use the key? Okay. Make this, login thing. You paste it there. You run it.
Uh-huh.
And now you're interacting, right? And Asian course, okay, give me a list of channels. You get a list of channels. Okay, give me this. You get it again, right? So it's an interactive development environment.
That's nice. If someone wants to get started with Xamarin and start, maybe a lot of folks here have never even touched C# or Xamarin of that nature. If people wanted to get started with it, what's the best way that they can have the best experience?
Oh, we have very good news for you. Very, very good news for you. Download Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. The latest version of Visual Studio has everything that you need. And you can pick and choose what you want.
For Mac or Windows?
Mac or Windows.
Okay.
You pick and choose what capabilities you want. But they both include Android, iOS, tvOS, watchOS, right? The mobile things. Or the server stuff. So, in fact, when you do file new, we even say, "Hey, you want that server with that, right? You want a server with the fries, you want fries with the
the meal." That.
So you build a mobile app. It's like, "Hey, you want a backend? You click a button, and we'll give you a backend right there that is does authentication, provisioning. You know, they wires the two together, so you can you have a place to get started, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of mobile apps are just front ends to backends, so you're gonna put your mid and backend. And we're making it easy for you to do that.
So let me ask a question about that real quick.
Yeah.
Let's say for some reason, and I deal with a lot of startups, that our backend is written in Node.
Yeah.
Can we do something like that or what?
Yes. Absolutely. And I think there's a very nice set of demos that there was a session yesterday that went through some of these things. But yeah, we'll support them Node. And I mean, the other thing about Visual Studio, and I forgot to mention this, is it's not only that it's an IDE for writing code, but These days, you can use it to manage your cloud backends, your cloud databases, or managing your Kubernetes deployment. So if you already have a node app, we'll help you containerize it, right? And, you know, we'll split it up in microservices. We'll do the orchestration. There was a very nice demo yesterday from Scott Hanselman showing just how we do it. And it's all from Visual Studio. We will help you do everything. We'll Dockerize it. We'll publish. We'll do, you know, whatever needs to be done. So it goes beyond just we'll get the mobile app built, right? We'll support you from beginning to end.
Fantastic. What I'll do is I'll add a link to Visual Studio and to Hanselman's talk and the other stuff we talked about, such as the live updating to the show notes for this episode. Again, I can't say thanks enough. It's been
a
big honor of mine to speak to you. I've looked up to you for a long time. And thank you for
contributing. You're too kind. Thank you.
Thank you for contributing so much to the community over the years, being so proactive about open source. It's something that I know that everyone on the Android side is always very passionate about open source. So thanks again for coming on the show. If folks want to reach out to you and get a hold of you, what's the best way they can follow you or contact you?
Miguel@Microsoft is my official email address. And if you do not mind the ramblings of an old man, you can find me on Twitter at Miguel de Icaza.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Miguel. Have a good one.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, folks. Kaushik again. I hope you enjoyed that one. We now take a listen to Simina Pasad, a program manager at Microsoft, and she talks to Don about Microsoft's new service, App Center. Take a listen.
Okay, I'm sitting here with Simina Pasad from Microsoft, but folks may not be familiar with you, may didn't watch the keynote or anything like that. If you kind of explain kind of the teams that you've worked within and what you do here at Microsoft, it would be great. So we can get a little background.
Yeah, sure. Currently, I'm a program manager in the Visual Studio App Center team. And before that, I joined Microsoft as a program manager in the Xbox team. So I had a lot of fun with games and especially services for games. So I was in Xbox Live. And then 1 year into me being in Microsoft, Hockey App joined Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Hockey App from my studies because I studied in Germany. And I was really interested in working with this team. So I joined the Hockey App team after they got acquired by Microsoft.
What was hockey first? Because there are going to be some people who are listening and say, I have no idea what hockey is. Are we talking about the sport or what are we talking about? What is hockey?
So Hockey App is a service for mobile developers and also for desktop developers, which helps them to easily distribute the app to testers, okay. To get crash reports, feedback from the testers, and a newer feature was analytics as well.
Oh, okay. All right. So recently, yesterday, I guess it would be, you announced, I think it was called App Center. Is that correct?
Yes.
Does that have anything to do with hockey or
yes.
what's?
Yes.
What is that?
So Visual Studio App Center is the next generation of Hockey App.
Okay.
And as working on Hockey App, we noticed that users have further needs in their mobile DevOps pipeline.
Okay.
And then Xamarin also has some interesting services around the mobile DevOps pipeline. Some people might be familiar with Xamarin Test Cloud.
Yeah.
So we had all these different services who are really good on their own, mm-hmm. but we wanted to be able to tell a story end-to-end to our customers about how things can work from, you know, building your app in whatever language you use to build the app,
mm-hmm.
up to shipping it to the store, getting insights from the users, and being able to do this with one product and not with like three or four different products.
Yeah, exactly. Is that what App Center does? It kind of brings all these things together?
Yes.
All right. As an Android developer, I know that I may want to get my app to beta users. I may use, like you said, I may use three or four different services and kind of glue these together with whatever process that I have. But as an Android developer who's listening to this now, what would be one of the big hooks for them to come over and start using App Center? What would be one of the things you would tell them, here's why you want to go use it?
Oh, I would think about at least two big reasons, especially for Android developers. Mm-hmm. As we know, there are so many devices and it's really crazy to test the quality of your app across all these devices.
Okay.
And in App Center, we have this huge device cloud with a few thousands of different devices that Android developers and any type of mobile developers can run their UI tests on.
Mm-hmm.
So they can run their UI tests in probably Espresso since they're Android developers.
True, yeah.
And then with a simple CLI command, they can just upload their test and we run them on as many devices as they want. We have thousands of them.
Which kind of is, maybe I should rewind here a little bit. this kind of gets into the whole like DevOps nature of application development. And so we kind of talk about CI and CD. Could you mind explaining to folks what that means for App Center CI and CD and how App Center kind of fits inside of that workflow?
So let's go one step back and think about our daily lives or a developer's daily life when you just write your code and commit to GitHub. I think that's kind of what we wish it was more rather than dealing with meetings and other things. Yeah. But you just write your code. You push your code to your Git repo. And then the next step is that you want to have the code on a device as fast as possible on a real device to try it out and to get feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, or in any product, having these quick iteration loops is incredibly important. And in the mobile space, it can be a bit more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are trying to do with CI and CD, so with continuous integration, continuous delivery, is that as soon as somebody does a Git push, we automatically build the code for them. And then we can easily test it and then distribute it on the device of their choice or to a distribution group, as we call them.
Okay, so that would be maybe my device, or are we talking about devices in the cloud? Which one are we talking about?
I would say devices in the cloud are for testing and for UI testing, but devices as yours, as mine, as anybody else are just testers or early adopters, maybe family, friends, and fools that want to try out your app.
Okay, awesome. So that means I could kind of set up, is there a way maybe I could set up different groups of people that maybe are like beta testers and alpha testers or something like that?
So we have a distribution service which is actually very similar with Hockey App, and it's based on Hockey App. It's just the next generation. So with people that are familiar with Hockey App, you basically go to the distribution service, set up some distribution groups. So as you said, alpha testers, beta testers, maybe an extended beta testers, which can be a public group. Okay. I know like games are super fond of doing extended beta testing with like thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you configure this group, you can even map the groups to branches. So let's say for every push you do to the develop branch, you would push to your internal alpha team. Okay. And for things you do to the master branch, it would go to your beta team, let's say, or the extended beta team.
Does App Center integrate, because what I'm hearing is the apps being automatically deployed to these different groups, but what about for things like Google Play? Can it auto deploy to Google Play? Is that possible? And is there a way for me to schedule that or to say, and one of the reasons I'm asking this is, and I'm completely clueless at this point, can I say, hey, only deploy it every 2 weeks, or does it have to happen every commit, or what's that whole story look like?
So I would say we definitely have integration with Google Play Store. So if you go into the distribution service, the mental model is a bit similar with the distribution group. So we have distribution groups for testing, internal testing, but we also have a store group. So you can distribute your APKs to the store directly from App Center. And in terms of scheduling, as of right now, there's no possibility to schedule things automatically on App Center. But we do have a fully fledged API and also CLI, which have the same functionality as everything you see in the UI. So let's say if you have your own job or your own logic for scheduling things, you can easily do everything from the API.
To use something like App Center, do I have to write my things in Xamarin? Or if maybe I'm an Android developer and there's no way I'm going to give up the code that I'm writing and I love Kotlin or whatever, can I still write in that language and still use something like App Center?
That's a great question. And one of the principles that we worked on when we started developing App Center was that we want to meet developers where they are. So we don't care if you want to write your code in Java, in C#, Objective-C for iOS developer, React Native. Like we really don't care.
All right.
We try to have support for where we see the most developers are.
Okay, so let's say I do that. I make some code changes. I'm writing in Java or whatever. I push it up to my GitHub repository. At that point, App Center recognizes it as normal continuous integration would, picks it up, builds it. It then, I guess, it would read my Gradle build file, and it would just execute whatever we want from there. And then if the build completes, then I can actually, is there a step that I can tell, hey, if the build completes, then go run it on these 10 devices? Is that what that looks like?
Yes, exactly. So when you go into App Center and you want to set up your build, the flow is pretty easy. You find your Git repository, and you configure it a specific branch. And depending on your app type, we already know what to scan for. So for Android, Java, we look at Gradle, we look at the variants, we look at the modules. You have really nice drop downs, so you don't even have to write anything like how to put any path or like, you know, manual configurations. You just select from the drop downs, and then you can sign your build. And then you have, if you want to distribute them, you have the list of distribution groups that you already configured. And then you can run on real devices, as you're saying, on 10 different devices. And one feature that I really like is that even if you don't have tests written, because we notice that some people don't like to write UI tests.
A lot of people, unfortunately.
We have this really cool feature that we call a launch test that will take the APK and run it and take a screenshot on a random device in the test cloud.
Oh, really?
The device cloud. So just takes a screenshot, and if it passes, your build goes forward and you can distribute.
So it's just a very basic, hey, we've run it, we've installed it, we basically pressed on the app icon and now it's started. Exactly. We're simulating that.
Exactly.
And it opens. Okay, it looks like it worked. But if for some reason the app crashes, then at that point, then we fail. Okay.
And you know, it's like a really frequent thing to happen that your app is crashing on launch. Unfortunately.
Yes, it is. And that's, but those simple things can, I mean, that's actually one test that I actually write for all of my clients when I first go is, can we launch the home screen and can I just read the title?
Yes.
That's just one simple espresso test that I write. And it's amazing how many things it catches. So you guys already do that out of the box. That's amazing.
Like you have to write zero line of codes and we launch your app automatically and we check if it's, if there's a screenshot of the app or a crash.
So I don't know much about the features of the testing environment here. But let's just say I have, and this is a true example, I have espresso tests and we've written hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of them, and they take forever to run. I'm talking 4 or 5 hours to run. Is there a way for me to kind of break those up so it can run quicker or shard them across different devices? Is there anything I can do in that nature to speed up my builds or what?
Yeah, the easiest thing you can do is to increase concurrency. So as we look at the test service, we think about concurrent devices.
Okay.
So let's say if you want to run your test on 100 devices, you obviously don't want to take them one by one on each of the devices. So you can just increase the concurrency, which is a paid feature. And then you can have, like on my account, I have 50 concurrent devices because I want my stuff to be super fast.
So I could run it on a Pixel 2 device and I could run it on a Nexus 5 and a Samsung S5 or whatever and then get all the results back from those.
Exactly.
So different screen sizes. Okay, that's fantastic. For developers that are working in another IDE, so I'm kind of going back and forth here, and say they're working in IntelliJ or Android Studio or whatever they're working in, is there any way that, is there any integrations with those tools to App Center so I can be notified of any builds? Because the reason why I'm asking this is because I used to develop in Microsoft tools and the integrations were really good. If a build failed, I could get an IDE notification. What does that look like from a developer perspective? If they're writing code, they push up to GitHub, they think it's good, but the build fails. Is it just a regular email or what does that whole process look like? Is there anything that I can get integrated into my IDE or anything else?
App Center has a fully fledged API.
Okay.
So like if developers feel like they have the need for something, they can easily write an extension, for instance, or something just to pull our APIs and find out what's happening. And we would love to see such contributions. In fact, when we had Xamarin Test Cloud, we had the Jenkins extension was a community contribution.
Oh, nice. Okay. So,
yeah.
That's fantastic. So I could connect, maybe write a little extension, maybe even have it drop it into a Slack channel if a build broke or anything like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And actually, that exact feature is something that we're going to work on having Slack notifications when builds are broken.
Yeah, that's a fantastic
feature.
It's on
the backlog.
That's great. Yeah, move it up a few notches. I know everyone's probably waiting for that. We have that integrated at one of my clients, and it's just they use Jenkins at this time, but it's a great feature. No one wanted.
We have it as well in our team for our backend services.
Oh, so you've got it written. You just got to get it migrated over. Okay, I see. So what other, like you had mentioned, analytics, crash reporting, push notifications. There's probably a whole slew of things, as most companies usually do when they create a product that has a bunch of other features. What features haven't we talked about? We talked about CI, testing, kind of distribution groups, but what other stuff is inside of App Center that would be interesting to other developers?
When we created App Center, we thought we want to allow people to quickly iterate on things, which is what the CI/CD part of the product deals with. But then the next thing is, okay, you iterate fast, but you want to be able to learn the iterations, right?
Yeah.
So then we have this App Center SDK, which enables monitoring services such as crash reporting and analytics.
Okay.
And that's a part that you can, as a developer, you can get insights from the users. And then you can further iterate with CI/CD. And the next step is, okay, you get insights, you can quickly iterate, but you also want to engage with your users.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the push notifications come in play.
So for the analytics, what are those analytics? Is that saying, hey, a user went from screen A to screen B, or is this more of analytics such as your app has been installed by this many users and the average session length is this, and here's your daily active users and stuff like that? What kind of analytics are we looking at here, or are they both?
I would say they're both. First of all, out of the box, when you install the SDK mm-hmm. and initialize it in your app, you get active users, daily sessions, length of sessions, top devices used, country. Okay. So kind of all the things you can expect out of the box.
Okay.
And then if you use the SDK to track events, you can really track all the event, like all the button clicks, how long some requests are taking. You can log properties. You can log everything what you need on those events.
Oh, okay. Additional information.
Exactly.
Okay.
And something cool with analytics is that we know that people like dashboards and they like to see things in a product dashboard, but sometimes they want to get their own data and to consume it however they want. So we've built this feature only, I think, 1 or 2 months ago that allows export of the data into different sources.
Okay.
One is Application Insights, which is a solution from Microsoft across for insights, and also that has a query language on top. So you get all the raw data there, and you can run all your queries in this query language and get more insights.
So I can kind of dig into my analytics then through the query language. So I don't have to, I don't have to pull it down locally into some database or anything. Okay.
And then you can even export it further to, let's say, Power BI or to some Excel spreadsheet, and then do your own dashboards.
Okay.
However your company might want them.
Yeah.
And then the second source that you can export your data is to Azure Blob Storage, which is really cool because then you can do anything on top of the data and you have unlimited retention. You can keep it there for as long as you want and you can analyze it however you want.
Well, this sounds like a great product. Something I need to go check out, because there's, especially for me in a consultant perspective, if I can provide something to my customers that's really easy to use. And really, this launch test thing is kind of really gets my imagination going, because that can save me a bunch of time. Because traditionally, I have to set up an application. I got to write an espresso test, which espresso tests are good. Then I have to go find a CI server. Is it going to be one of these 10 other providers? Get it running. Did I build it right? Is the documentation old? But this sounds a whole lot easier. I just connect my GitHub repository, check some boxes, say, all right, run this launch test or whatever, and then I can go back to business problems. Now, I'm not saying by any means for the listeners that one test is all you need to write, but it's a good start to kind of get everything
better than nothing.
Exactly. So, well, I really appreciate you coming on the show here today. It's been fantastic. If folks would like to get a hold of you, ask you questions about App Center, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
My Twitter handler is @SiminaPassat, and App Center Twitter handle is @VSAppCenter.
Okay.
So tweet at us and we're going to reply.
All right. Well, we'll make sure to add links to all this kind of stuff on the podcast mm-hmm. and add links to your profiles and to App Center as well. And I want to say thanks again for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was super fun.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.